Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show, CJAD 800.
Good morning to you. It is the Home Improvement Show with me, Dan Laxer, and Walter Assey of Renovco across the desk. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Nice to see you.
Always.
It's getting chillier. I think the high is 3 today, 2 tomorrow. A little bit warmer later on in the week, but it's time.
It is time. You're cutting it too close if you're still thinking it's time, but it's time.
Okay. Is it too late to verify our furnaces?
I mean, it's never too late, right?
Yeah.
But there's many things that I find get to be forgotten or ignored because the furnace is usually in this room that is in the basement, tucked away,
yeah.
Doors closed. It's very important that we replace the filters on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. We can't even emphasize for the efficiency, for the well-being of the furnace, and so on and so forth. And this is not once a year type scenario. This have to happen at least once every 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you are doing renovations or anything that could create dust, then you have to do it a lot more often. In certain cases, it could be done once a week. If you're doing something major that you have a feeling that it's going to create a lot of dust, that it's going to clog up your system, although we recommend strongly that you shut off the furnace during renovations, but sometimes it's a bit prohibitive if you're renovating in February in minus 20.
Yeah.
Unless you bring in some temporary heat or something. So get that verified. Make sure that it's in good working condition. Check your heat pump as well. Make sure it's in good functioning condition. Because if not, what happens, your furnace is going to kick in. And not your heat pump, because let's say your heat pump is not working. And you're going to be paying a big amount of money because now you don't have your dual energy working. And we see that often with people that have a dual energy heat. They get to know because they have a oil, for example, as an oil furnace. And then all of a sudden they're spending a lot more oil than usual. They investigate a bit more and their heat pump is not working.
Right.
So it's things like this that will actually get you to save money, be more comfortable. The other thing that we have to be very mindful of is the interior air quality of the home.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. In the winter, we tend to close our windows and very seldom will open the windows to aerate the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 5 minutes a day to flush the bad air out and the new air, especially in older homes. I mean, the newer homes tend to have air exchangers. You need to change the filters on those as well. That's a bit less critical. But in older homes where you don't have an air exchanger, you need to flush the air. You need to get fresh air intake in. You need to always be mindful of the humidity level in the house. And that's also often ignored. You have to invest in a hygrometer, and you have to continuously monitor where your humidity is, summer and winter. Okay. Now, when we have a humidity level that are less than 40% in a home, that means that the home is too dry.
Mm-hmm.
Too dry means your air quality is terrible. Means that you're gonna have anything that is made out of wood. You're gonna see that you have shrinkage. You know, your hardwood floor is gonna start to open more. And, you know, wood is a life matter. Your doors are going to shrink. Everything is going to shrink.
Mm-hmm.
The opposite happens in the summer when the humidity is high.
Yes.
Everything is going to start expanding. So you see that the doors, you know, tend to be harder to close or anything like that. But above all, it's a comfort level for you living in the home.
Yeah, because you can, when it gets dry, you can feel it in the air.
Big time.
More with different kinds of heat, or is it the same?
Well, you know what? The healthiest type of heat is the hot water heat.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
That's really the healthiest. And I mean, you know, given that we live in these conditions and we use heat often, I'm actually surprised that it's not something that's being used a lot more often because it is very comfortable in the winter because it does not dry up the air.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you don't have that, especially if you have electric or even oil, or electric baseboards is the worst because that really dries up the air.
You know,
So you definitely need to humidify. And I'm not saying just where you're sleeping. I'm saying, like, really you need to humidify in any room that is that you live in. You know, and be something as small as buying a portable humidifier from, like, Canadian Tire or something and just putting it on. And, of course, you have the hygrometers to monitor, if you know, what level you're at and what have you. I mean, the house is a system. So the air quality is so important, but it's the most ignored in a home, which I don't particularly understand. So, you know, these are the little things that will make a big impact on you. You'll sleep better. Your house is going to be in much, much better condition. If you have too much humidity, let's say, in the summer, what most people don't know is that just the relative humidity that is high in the air, okay, would create mold spores. So you don't need necessarily a source of water to get mold. And that's why we say this is a very important part of a homeowner's proactive plan. So what are we going to do now there's a change of season and so on and so forth? Typically, you see in homes that the autumn and the spring are the more comfortable times. Why? Because the humidity level is in check either way. So that's why we tend to enjoy our homes a lot more in these particular times.
Yeah.
But I mean, you could do it yourself without having to wait for that season to sleep better, or, you know, to be less dry, or to be less itchy, or, you know.
Yeah, it's the itchiness.
Yeah, or less congested and so on and so forth.
That's Walter Assey of Renovco on the Home Improvement Show, 514-790-0800, 1-800-491-CJD, and you can text us your questions to 514-800. What's the ideal humidity level in the winter?
You know what? Anywhere between 50 to 55%,
oh, really?
You're okay. Good. You know, they say 40, I find a bit on the dry side. 45 to 55 really is your sweet spot any time of the year, by the way, not just in the winter.
Okay. Let's go. Let's head to the phones. Start in St. Leonard with Frank. You got a question about your hot water tank?
Yeah. Good morning. I have a place.
Hello, Frank.
He put us on hold, I think.
Frank.
He got another call.
Very big cheekbones, I guess. I don't know. That was very odd. You were saying it. You know, you could use the just a small portable model. Those are the. They call them ultrasonic humidifiers?
Is that what it is? Really, any type of humidifier works as long as... I like the ones that have no filters.
Yeah.
Okay, it's just water that spits out. That's pretty much what you want to get. I don't like the hot one. I just like the one that have the ambient water level, because the hot ones, when it's too hot, creates bacteria.
Yes.
So, you know, it doesn't have to be overly sophisticated. So I like to combine it with an air purifier. So you have a humidifier, and then you have an air purifier. If you don't have an air exchanger at home, or your home is potentially too big for the air exchanger you have, that is a good thing to have. So you'll have, you know, those, again, they're portable, and they work. There's different sizes depending on the size of the home, of the room. So you can have them in different rooms. And you will see that it makes a huge impact on the overall comfort of the house.
Would you need one in each room, or could it be in a central central area in the house?
Depending on the size. So typically you would need one because they're small and they're not very powerful on the CFM and the size of the room, the cubic volume of the room. You know, for you to get something big enough, these big bulky machines, and they're very loud. So I'm talking about the portable ones now. So having one in every room is really what you want in this case.
Okay.
They're small. They're literally like small block. It's one by one, so they don't take a lot of space, but they help in purifying the air especially in the areas where you sleep.
Okay. Good advice. 514-790-0800, Star Talk on Bell Mobility, and you can text in to 514-800. We've got a call coming in, and we have a text, and we'll get to those in just a few moments. But first,
you might just need to tighten the thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
All of a sudden, we're very busy. We've got texts, we've got calls. Let's get to it. Good morning, Kathy.
Yes, hi. Good morning.
Hello. How can we help you?
Okay. So here we use dual energy. We have an oil furnace and a heat pump. And when the system was installed, we were told that the furnace, the oil furnace, will kick in at anything below minus 15. So what's happening here is in the evening, we lower the thermostat to about 19, 20 degrees. And in the morning, when I turn it up to about 21, 22, very shortly, the oil furnace kicks in. So I'm wondering why that is.
That is normal, but because what you're doing is you're not asking for a gradual increase of the temperature.
Okay.
When you give, think of it as giving the system a shock. So when you ask your house that is at 19 degrees, go up to 22 right away, the furnace, the oil furnace usually kicks in to compensate for that difference. Now, the way you want to do it is, especially if you have a programmable thermostat, what you do is you add, let's say you wake up at 8. So you start increasing gradually the temperature from 5 in the morning. So you put 5 in the morning, 8 at 19, 6 in the morning, 20, 7 in the morning, 21. And then that way you're giving the time for the system not to be shocked and to gradually increase.
Okay, that's good to know. I do have a programmable thermostat, which I don't use. I had a feeling that that was the reason, that I'm asking too much of a temperature change. But I just thought that there's something wrong with the system that I should have it.
Okay. There's nothing wrong. I mean, this happens often. Okay. The fact that you have a programmable thermostat, and especially if you're a creature of habit, meaning you have a routine that you say, okay, I want 19 when I sleep, I want 22 when I wake up. That is the best thing you can have. You know, I know some people, it's a bit more complicated. Mm-hmm. This depends on their hot flashes and this and that and the other thing, right?
Okay.
So they go up and down accordingly.
Unfortunately, I'm past that stage.
Okay.
Hope that helps, Kathy. Thanks for the call.
Yes, it does. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Does that count for electric baseboard heaters as well? Do you still have to gradually, or if you...
No. I mean, in her case, it just because it costs more to heat this way,
right?
You know, you're getting the furnace to kick in at a time where it's not supposed to kick in.
Okay,
so it becomes just a question of energy and money saving.
Mm-hmm.
As far as a electric thermostat, I mean, it doesn't really matter because you're spending that high ratio of hydro anyways. High rate of no matter what you do. So it's not really you know, it's anything that you do gradually in this case will pay off better for you. That's pretty much what it is. It's just a question of dollars.
Okay, fair enough. From Coates and Luke, we go to TMR. There's John. Hi there, John. How can we help you? John?
Hello, this is John from Tanamount Royal.
Yes, sir. How can we help you?
Yes, we had a flood a month or two ago. Despite the fact that we have three back water valves, the water came through past the back water valves up into the toilet, into the basement sink, and the hole that's in our furnace room where our furnace drips.
Mm-hmm.
We had the back water valves checked, and the plumbers said, no, they're in perfect working order, but they're not supposed to stop the water completely. Is there any way to stop the water from coming in from the outside?
Okay, so your plumber is partially right, okay? Under normal circumstances, the backwater valve is like a flap that allows water to go out, but does not allow water to come back in through the city. Only problem that we have with backwater valves in general is that there's a misconception to install them and forget them.
Mm-hmm.
What most plumbers maybe fail to tell you, or most homeowners don't do, is they do not maintain them and clean them on a regular basis. And when I say regular basis, I mean twice a year. Because don't forget, this is a flap. It goes up and down. So if you don't clean it on regular basis, what's going to happen is at one point that clap or flap is going to be stuck in place. So when you need it to work, it's not working.
Right.
And we've seen that often in many, many different scenarios. There are even some that were not even accessible. So you have, they were installed and then a floor was built on top of them and you didn't even know where they were. So in this case, you know, it becomes useless because it doesn't work as well. Now, in the case where you're maintaining them, and when you have a natural disaster, so let's say what we had last July, I mean, it's something that we don't have every year, 85 millimeter of rain in like in an hour or two. So that's overloading the system, and very little can be done as far as the home is concerned to stop that. It's more a question to ask what can the city do to its infrastructure so it can take a lot more water than what usually can. And that's usually what's happening, is that the sewer systems of the city is getting overloaded and then it's backing up into people's homes. Now, the people with backup valves, they tend to have a lot less volume of water that goes in than someone that doesn't have it. Mm-hmm. Someone that doesn't have it might have 4 or 5 feet of water. Someone else might have maybe a couple of inches of water that have a clapet, that have the backwater valve. So, but we've seen also cases where all the neighbors were flooded and these people with backwater valves had no problems. So, I mean, it becomes a question of how much water is coming in your particular location, depending where you are on the street and depending on many other factors. And usually if you are on a street where you're the only one that have a backwater valve, you might get luckier than the other guy that doesn't, because the water tends to go in a bit more in the other homes, so the volume on yours become a lot less.
So you just have to have it looked at and cleaned to start.
That is correct. As far as you're concerned, that's the only thing you could do. The other thing that you should do, and also, it's the branches, right? So you need to have on every water source a branch. Sometimes you come into the basement, and there's like a laundry room, and then there's a bathroom, and only the bathroom is protected. Well, in this case, then you're really not protected 100%. Mm-hmm. You're partially protected. So the plumber should look at all your branchement, all your different plumbing branches, and ensure that there's a backwater valve dedicated to each one.
All right. I hope that helps, John. Thanks so much for the call. We've got all kinds of questions. We've got questions from LaSalle and Pancor about bathroom ventilation, questions about flooring, plumbing, bathroom sinks, kitchen sinks, etc. All coming in at 514-790-0800, 1-800-491-CJD on your cell phone.
So you're throwing everything at me, including the kitchen sink.
Absolutely. The kitchen sink, the bathroom sink.
No pun intended.
Of course. And the questions for Walter Assey of Renovco on the Home Improvement Show. Some of you might actually be listening to this on the iHeartRadio app, which you can download anytime. You can stay up to date. Breaking news from CTV, up-to-the-minute traffic and weather, interviews, compelling conversation from some of your favorite shows on CJD, podcasts, Andrew Carter, The Big Five, Fasci Capellos, Montreal Now, plus access to hundreds of other local, national, and international radio stations, all free, all at your fingertips, the iHeartRadio app. Download it today. Well, coming back with more on the Home Improvement Show on the other side of the 9:30 news.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
With me, Dan Laxer, and Walter Assey of Renovco. And earlier, Frank tried to call. We don't know what happened with his phone, but he texted in his question. Similar to a question we had last week, I have a place that heats with hot water tank. When I leave for more than 1 month, I was told to turn off the main water valve. Is that correct? Can I close the water valves under my kitchen sink and behind the bathroom bowl in case there is a leak?
I mean, that's one area that you're protecting, but you're not protecting the whole house.
Yeah.
If you want to, I mean, if you're someone that travels a lot or work long hours and you... that's a worry for you, I mean, justifiably so. There are other things that are available right now, and they don't require so much your involvement of, you know, doing, if you wish, remembering to shut off the water and turning on. And it's a system like the AquaTrip system. So it's a valve that you install in the main valve, And it's a smart valve, like Moen does them now.
Mm-hmm.
It costs about $700, the actual part. And what it does, it studies your water consumption routine.
Okay.
And it also evaluates your the pressure of the water in the house. So when it detects that there is extra pressure of water or change in the pressure of water, I should say, it's kind of detecting there's something wrong with the system.
Okay.
It automatically shuts off the system.
Right.
Okay. There are other technologies out there now. There are the water pucks that you install in strategic areas. And if you have a smart valve, it's linked to them. And they kind of communicate together. And if one puck detects water, it shuts off the system.
It shuts it off, yeah.
So there's many things you could do and you can explore that are, you know, part of the smart home, if you want, scenario. But if you are traveling somewhere and you really want to ensure that you don't have any issues, well, I mean, there's a lot more to it. You need to drain the toilet, you need to drain the pipes, and then you shut off the water and off you go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much the gist of it. There's not much. If you do it only in certain areas, well, it's only these areas are going to be protected, not the whole house.
Right. Okay, makes sense. Here's a flooring question. Listener wanting to know the best flooring for basements. We currently have parquetry, and do you recommend heated floors?
I mean, with heated floors, you have to be careful because not every floor flooring is heated floor compatible. So you have to make sure that it is. For example, vinyl planks, most manufacturers do not recommend that you install heated floors under vinyl planks.
Okay.
Because they will delaminate and they will change their the structure.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are going to go with the heated floor route, if you have a big basement, it's going to be cost prohibitive. There are other options. It's expensive. So, I mean, the best, if you wish, material for heated floors is always porcelain, okay?
Yeah.
This is really have the best conductivity and you get the most comfort out of it. Whereas with, you know, engineered floors, there are, because of the thickness element, you don't get, if you wish, that much of the heat transfer.
Mm-hmm.
So having said that, the best or the more popular product for basements now is a vinyl PVC type component.
Mm-hmm.
The reason it's popular is because, number one, it's waterproof, completely waterproof.
Yeah.
Number two, it can be declicked and reclicked if you need to repair it.
Okay, yeah.
So technically, you can conserve a lot of the flooring in case you need to repair it partially. Third thing is it's very resistant to scratching and use and wear and tear. So if your kids play down there or if you have animals and what have you, that will be a good material to have. And it's warm. It's warm. Why? Because number one, it's vinyl, and number two, a lot of them have cork backing, so
yes.
It acts as an additional insulator.
Right.
Right. So I mean, that's why we're saying that the vast majority of floors in the past used to be the floating floors, but the floating floors have their own restrictions in the sense that you drop a glass of water on a flooring floor and it bubbles and it delaminates
and you have to rip it out
and what have you. So it's not really the best scenario. Vinyl PVC is the way to go. If you want to have absolutely heated floors and you have the budget for it, then I would suggest porcelain because you're going to get the most bang out of your buck as far as heat is concerned.
All right. From St. Leonard, let's go to Pangkor. This is Don.
Hi, this was...
Hello, Don.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How can we help you?
Yes, I had my main bathroom ventilation and the powder room installed. Like I bought a new fan and everything. But I noticed it's making noise, like a vibration type of sound.
Mm-hmm.
And before he answers that question, I just need a number for someone to have rodent problem in the ceiling. It came from, like, I live in a semi-detached cottage, so it came through the neighbor's side.
A what kind of problem? Rodent.
Squirrel
problem.
And mouse. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need a number, please.
Okay.
For that.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. So as far as the bathroom ventilation is concerned, my question is, who installed the bathroom fan first? Is it like an electrician or it's
yeah,
a job?
Someone that I know, they do renovation. But
mm-hmm. Okay. And is your fan vented to the outside or is just, you know?
It's vented to the outside.
You know that for a fact, right?
Yes, because I turn on the fan vent and I also go outside to see where the flap opens.
Okay.
Got it.
It opens, okay. But I notice only one flap is open. The rest, so I need that to be changed. But it's so high, we can't personally change it. We need a professional.
All right. So, I mean, look, there's usually what we've seen is this is a bad installation job. That means the fan was not adequately fixed either to the ceiling or to the ducting that exhausts to the outside. And that's what's making the vibration.
Like a vibrating sound.
That is correct. So, okay. I mean, if the fan is in good working conditions, which, I mean, it's
brand
turning
new.
On. That's right. It's turning on. You see the flap outside. Mm-hmm. So it means there's suction. Then it's definitely the way it was installed.
Okay.
So the gentleman would have to come back, take it off, take it out, and then reinstall it. But this time, make sure it's properly fixed. If you have it not adequately fastened, then it's going to vibrate the whole time. And you're going to see that with time, it's going to get louder.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I noticed that the moisture doesn't stay in the bathroom. So I did buy a good system. I bought, it's 110.
Well, you said it's a powder room, right?
FM. So that's good, you know?
Yeah.
So I know it's working, but it's the vibration that...
You also said it's a powder room, right?
No, it's the main bathroom.
It's the main bathroom.
About
okay.
1.5 tons, so it shouldn't be making any noise.
No.
Based on
no.
what I paid for.
No, no, that's okay. exactly. Especially, I mean, even the loud ones, the cheap ones, they do make a sound, but it's not supposed to be a vibrating sound.
Okay,
so, I mean, one thing to hear the motor is another thing to hear the vibration. The vibration means it's not properly fastened and get that fixed as fast as
possible. Okay, thank you. And I need the number, please. For
yes.
Like,
so, I mean, look, for rodent problem, I mean, you could call companies like Abel. It's
Abel?
Abbel.
Okay, thank you.
I'm not sure if it's a double L though at the end, but I remember it's AB.
And they come over to Pincor area, you think?
They do. Yes, they do. And what they're going to probably do, they're going to, what you want them to do, I'm not going to say they're going to do because I haven't done a tour with a rodent guy before, but what they usually do is they walk around the property to see the potential point of entry for mice.
Right.
Okay. Now, typically the fall, as soon as the weather turns, that's when rodents like to seek a warmer area, and usually homes is a place for them to come. So, and they can come from the weirdest places. We've seen cases where they came through the brick vents.
Mm-hmm.
Out of all the places, you know, that bottom of the brick, you have those like we call them in French chantepleurs. So these types of openings will get you rodents in, although it looks small. But rodents can...
They can squeeze
They can squeeze themselves, and it's actually impressive. So they come in. They can come in through there. They can come in through openings around badly cocked areas, under garage doors, if it's not properly weather-sealed, I should say. So it could be really anything. That's your best bet, is to stop them at the point of entry. Mm-hmm. If you don't, then you're going to be having the issue of trapping them inside the home, which is going to be fighting a losing battle all winter long because they're going to keep coming in. So if you can find where it's coming in and stop it at the source, that would be the most awesome thing you could do. If not, these guys are going to come in and they're going to be installing traps. I mean, usually they have those devices where the mice go into them, and it doesn't trap the mice, but it feeds, it's food for the mice, and then the mice go
and bring it back.
And then they, yeah, exactly, and then they die, and then they wither, and so on and so forth. So it's a bit of a thing, but it works because it's like a multiple trap system. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, it does not trap the mice, but it more like feed the mice, and then eventually the mice will die.
Right.
They get dehydrated and they die.
All right. Hope that helps, Don. Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you so much.
So we've got a text about bathroom noise and a text about renovations, or call rather. We'll try to get to as much as we can before the show is out.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
So like I said, we have a question about plumbing noise. This is a text. It says here, first thing in the morning, we open the tap in the bathroom or flush the toilet. There's a vibration noise like a jackhammer. In the kitchen on the other end of the house, 25 feet away, if we go and open and close the faucet in the kitchen, it stops. Sometimes in the afternoon when no taps have been used for a while, the vibration in the kitchen occurs. Again, opening and closing the kitchen tap stops the noise. I notice it any time when opening the kitchen tap full blast, cold water only. The vibration also occurs. There has been no recent renovation inside or outside. Could this be debris in the pipes or a water pressure problem or what?
So here's the thing. I'm just going to maybe it's probably not a debris in the pipe
mm-hmm.
Because the debris in the pipe will have different symptoms than that. It's more likely what we call water hammer.
Yeah.
Water hammering. Now, I'm just going to touch on this subject because, again, it's something that is it's often ignored. Shut-off valves in general in the house, they do have an expiry date
mm-hmm.
linked to them. Most people don't know that. They think, okay, we installed it. It's done 50 years ago. It's good enough.
Right.
So more often than not, we see that the culprit are shut-off valves or valves that are not completely open. So, I mean, if you have not done a maintenance to the plumbing in a while, it's time to call in a plumber and have these verified
mm-hmm.
for different reasons. I mean, one of them is you want to make sure they're in good functioning order when you ever need them. And you want to make sure they don't let go on you and create water damage. And you want to make sure that the washers are not dried up and so on and so forth. So more often than not, you know, a lot of cases when you have water hammering, it's a washer somewhere that needs to be changed, something that dried up, and so on and so forth. If you do that and that doesn't work, then you can install what you call a water hammer arrestor.
Hmm.
So it's like a device you install, to have a diaphragm, and it's really made to take that shock that you get from the, you know, from the change of pressure. And kind of decrease the vibration in the pipe. So
okay.
That will solve the problem. Not a big job plumbing-wise. I like to completely go to this real issue and solve it from its source. So a water hammer arrester will solve it, but you're not solving the issue from the source. So just
yeah.
understand
it's
why.
It's a temporary measure.
It's not really temporary. It will work for a
okay.
long time. But again, there is a washer somewhere or a valve somewhere that's not functioning adequately.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have not done your verifications in a long time for plumbing maintenance, then maybe it's time to have it done.
All right. Let's see if we can squeeze in Jerry from LaSalle. How you doing, Jerry? How can we help?
How's it going, guys?
Good.
Having a good day so far?
Yeah. How can we help you?
I just wanted to ask Walter in his opinion. I did a complete gut job in a place and rebuilding it. So far, the demo was done. The insulation was put up, the framing, the vapor barrier, and the gyps and the plastering. At what point do you think I am at percentage-wise? There's still the kitchen that has to be installed, painting, doors and frames, interior, floors have not been done yet. Not even the self-leveling has been done yet. What percentage of the whole job do you think I'm at? Because, you know, it has to do with they wanting more funds. So when they started, they wanted 40%, and they said when they hit 50%, they want another amount. What percentage? In my thinking, I'm at 20-25%. Maybe by now, like, And they said they were going to do it within a month and a half. They're already over a month and a half. Where do you think we're at, Walter? Just so a guess summation like that.
Well, I mean, look, the way it works, it's wherever you're at contractually is what's important. Meaning, when the job is a bigger job, the method of payment is usually noted on the contract, and it's agreed upon between the contractor and the client. So, example, when you first start a job, you put a deposit. That deposit serves to buy all the materials, and it's supposed to cash flow the labor for a certain amount of time. So each company or each contractor have different ways of operation. And once you sign on the dotted line, you cannot, I mean, technically, look, it's a two-way street. You have a client and you have a contractor, and they both have a contract. Both have a job that they need to respect that contract. Whatever you sign on the dotted line, you might have signed that you're going to pay the guy 100% before he starts. Contractually, that will be your obligation. His obligation is to finish the job. So if a payment schedule was not done, then it becomes a problem because it becomes really objective to who you're asking. As far as he's concerned, well, I demolished, I cleaned, I removed debris, I did this, I did that, I did the roughing, I did the electrical roughing, I did the plumbing roughing. That's a lot of work. Now it's only the finishing. The guy,
the electrical roughing is not included. It's my own contractor.
Yeah.
So.
But I'm just saying in general. I mean, I'm not talking about your particular case. Mm-hmm. So, do you have a payment schedule on the contract?
Yes, it's 40% at the beginning, 40% at 50% of the job, and 20% at the end.
Yeah. So have you signed that contract?
Yeah.
So pretty much that's what you're supposed to be at. If you figure you're at 50% and you sign that he's going to pay, you have to pay another 40%, well, you're going to have to pay another 40%. Because
okay,
legally
in
you're
your,
obliged
your
to.
Opinion,
now, in my opinion... In my opinion, you know, roughing, depending on how much roughing was done from the beginning and how much demo was done. But in my opinion, once you get to the roughing stage, you are at about 50%, maybe 40% if you, you know, it really depends how much roughing you did. That's the thing.
There you go.
It depends how much roughing you did.
All right, Jerry, thanks for the call. Hope that helped. Walter, thank you so much.
My pleasure, sir. Always a pleasure.
And you, Walter Essie of Renovco. My name is Dan. Stay tuned for the car show with Lisa Christensen and then Remembrance Day programming starting at 10:45. Have a great day.